What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 152. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the shocking results from the PFL 2022 championships. We're going to take a look at the upcoming BKFC 34 card from Hollywood, Florida, featuring two title fights with Luis Palomino facing Tom Schoaf at lightweight. And we also have Ricci versus Mundell for the middleweight championship. And we're also going to be discussing UFC's upcoming fight night, which sees Kevin Holland return from his very short-lived retirement to face none other than Wonderboy Stephen Thompson. We've also got Brian Barberina versus Rafael Dos Anjos at welterweight. Before we get to the weed of the week, though, Paul and I are excited to announce our brand new partnership with the UFC store. You can use the links you'll find on our website, YouTube, and social media to get the absolute best deals on UFC fan apparel, gifts, and more. In fact, their brand new holiday gift drop number 2 has just hit. Click the links I mentioned or go to SWATMMA.com and click on the cool stuff button and you will find the best deals on the newest gear from the UFC. Now grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day.
Alrighty. So, we got a couple of solid new strains on the show today. So, we do have some scones by Lit, which is lost in translation.
Is that what you got right here?
Yeah, this is what I got fired up here in this joint. It is a 70-30 Indica Dominant Hybrid, a mixture of Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies and grape pie.
Dude, look at all the resin already piling up on the outside of this joint right there, dude.
It's pretty smooth too. Like it's not too harsh, you know. I mean, a lot of those like Girl Scout cookies, off like different brands and stuff like that, tend to have a smoother taste, I feel.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And then also we do have some secret.
What did you say it's crossed with? I'm sorry, go back to scones.
Thin mint cookies and grape pie.
Dude, I was actually gonna say I feel like there's a little bit of a mint aftertaste on this. I don't always get that minty terpene kind of flavor. Mm-hmm. But I actually got that here. That's nice. This is a nice fucking flavor.
It has a little bit of limonene and linalool, so that's probably where
what's the THC that on this bad boy?
It is 23%.
23?
Yes, sir.
So this is from Lost in Translation Lit.
Yep.
I like it. And what else we got? You were saying?
We also do have some Secret Weapon from Prime. It's a Sativa Dominant Hybrid 6040. It's a mixture of Cheese Quake and White Widow.
Now, I'm interested in smoking that one a little later in the show because when we first got legalized here, I was doing reviews on our sister channel, the LVME, on YouTube. And I did one on Prime, and this particular strain, and it looked super gorgeous, and it tasted like absolute dog shit. But Prime has gone on to be a very successful company, so I'm either chalking that up to, new growing, because it was right at the time of legalization. There's a lot of people that weren't, really curing their weed properly and so on. Because I don't see if they were still making that garbage at the price I paid, like $30 a gram at that time. I'm excited to see if they've improved it. And I'm going to guess that they have. But we'll see, man. Yeah. We'll see. Maybe we'll just have to throw it away. Maybe it won't be good enough to smoke. We're that bougie. No, we ain't never that bougie. All right, what else we got? We got one more?
And then we also do have a strain that we've had on the show a few times, some Animal Face, which is animal cookies.
Face Off OG, I like it. Man, this thing is practically dripping resin. That's when you know it's just...
I always feel like a lot of Lost in Translation to freaking weed, and I really like their concentrates as well, but I feel like they always have real good flavor and real good like terpene profile.
Yeah, I've messed around a bit with their concentrates in my cooking.
Yeah.
And they're nice. Their THC percentages are nice, and exactly what you just said, the terpenes are very good.
Last night, I had gotten edible from this DJ at my work. He's like slipped me edible from the cookies brand. It was this like lemon cake freaking gummy. Dude, it was crazy how good it tasted. It tasted like there was no THC in it. It was 25 milligrams, so like, you know, it wasn't gonna like throw me on my ass.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave me a pretty solid buzz. Like I was like, damn,
really?
That's pretty fucking good.
Dude, I wish I could get a buzz off that. Like, and I'm not saying this in any type of braggadocious manner, because it doesn't even matter if I take a long break from edibles. It's not my tolerance. It's just the way my body is. Like, if it's not 100 milligrams or more, I basically can't feel it.
Yeah,
and even at 100 milligrams, it's like I kind of feel it. Yeah. I really need like 150 to 200 to be like, okay, I'm stoned, you know?
It wasn't like I was like stoned, though. It was just like a little like lifted feeling, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like,
you know, I've tried those smaller ones. I don't. It's like I didn't eat anything, which just bums me out. Like it's like that sucks, dude. I got a boy in Colorado who's like raving about like he's sleeping so good taking these like 25 milligram gummies before he goes to bed. I'm like, I wish, dude.
Yeah.
But if the price is that shit, because here in Nevada we got the 100 milligram cap on our edibles. Yeah. You see, and that's the problem.
Card, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's not like in other states. I mean, they'll sell you a candy bar that has 1,000 milligrams in it. Unfortunately,
dude,
we can't do that.
I had a friend who made me, well, it was nuts. So we threw like, I think it was like, she was just trying to get rid of like a bunch of weed that she had. She was like, it's kind of like, I don't really like the taste of like smoking it. So she put like 38 grams in this like pot, on this like fucking tin of brownies.
Oh, and damn.
I was like, all right. Well, I was like, you know, if it's mids, you know, like 20%, like 17% THC.
Yeah, it's only like 2,000.
You only get like 2,000. That's what I'm saying. Probably like 2,000 milligrams in the tray. The thing is, we split the whole tray. Because we were like, it's mids. Let's just, we got to eat like the whole thing or it's not going to affect us. Dude, lost the whole day of my life.
Lost the whole day. Yeah, I bet you did, homie.
Fucking went home on a Wednesday night. Woke up on a Friday morning.
And I was like, and you were like, what?
I was like, on the Friday morning, too, I was like, damn, I'm still high. It was fucking nuts.
I like it. I like it a lot. Well, as we're continuing to puff down, we hope wherever you are, if this is your thing, that you're enjoying that as well. Hopefully it's legal where you are, like it is here with us. Let's jump into the combat sports, though, my friend. We had a lot of big action in the PFL. Now, it's too early to talk about whether or not their pay-per-view was a success in terms of sales, and who knows if we'll get accurate information as to that or not. But it does seem to have been a success as in terms of results. It seems like it was an exciting card. I'm not going to – I didn't watch it. I wasn't going to pay that much money for a PFL card. I'm not going to lie. But
yeah, I caught it on the internet pretty much.
We saw a lot of things that went down, but let's start with the big news out of it, which was, you know – Kayla Harrison fighting Larissa Pachenko for the third time. Everyone kind of just wrote this off, didn't they?
Yeah.
And we had a shocking, shocking upset.
Yeah. It was a close fight, don't get me wrong. The scores ended up being 48-47.
Across the board,
yeah. And so obviously there was, it wasn't just all Pacheco, but it was just like what I saw was just a serious want and went out and happened as far as like Larissa Pacheco and wanting to be better and wanting to make this fight, like, you know, take the fight to Kayla Harrison. Because I feel like one thing that has kind of been the theme in Kayla's career is her ability to just like kind of storm the gates early and just be too much to handle.
Yes, definitely.
And I feel like that was one thing that Larissa never really let her just completely take over the fight. There was always a point in the fight where, you know, there was no dominance by Kayla Harrison, basically what I'm saying. And that's always been her more or less path to victories, is dominating her opponent. And I feel like this was a good lesson for her. I mean, it's kind of hard to get up. We talked about this in the past. Like, when you beat someone twice, going into a third fight, the hunger maybe wasn't there, and that could have
let's talk about that as well. I mean, no disrespect to Pachenko, this is the trilogy fight that nobody outside of her and her fans wanted. I mean, Kayla Harrison, what does she need to fight for a third time for here? You can see where she might, I'd hate to say overlook her and not attribute that. I mean, Pacheco went out there and got the job done. But I'm saying the drive that fucking drive to go out and earn that victory, I think is going to be a lot stronger coming from Larissa than it was coming from Kayla Harrison, just by natural human psychology, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that played a part in it. No excuses.
Yeah.
Here, Kayla's part of her job is to overcome that. That's her job, and she didn't do it. And Pachenko went out and earned herself a victory here, and she's not going to go undefeated. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I don't like it when an MMA fighter goes undefeated and then retires, because I think that that means you probably didn't face the best competition that you could have.
Yeah.
The exception to that currently being John Jones, but he's not really retired. He has faced the best competition that he could. But like Khabib, for instance, I don't want to go off on a Khabib rant. I'm just saying there's an argument to be made about the number of title defenses and who he fought and didn't fight before he got that O and retired.
Yeah.
Okay. Or before he retired with that O, I mean. But so I'm glad actually to see Kayla Harrison lose here in a weird way.
Well, my question though with this is, how much do you think that hurt her brand?
It depends. I believe she has two more fights under the PFL banner, from what I've understood about her contract, and then she's an unrestricted free agent. There's no matching period. There's no 30-day, 90-day waiting. There's nothing that she was under before when she just signed this new contract. I believe it was a straight-up three-fight deal,
yeah,
or whatever number of fights it was. I think she has two left. So a lot depends on her next fight and if she gets this victory back. There has to be a fourth fight here for her. She goes back out and pulls a GSP, gets the W, there you go. Yeah. You're going to go right on, and you've faced adversity. You've come back, and you've done it just like a lot of the greats, like Anderson Silva has, like GSP has. I think he's the best example. Mm-hmm. You know, or actually, Connor's a really good example there, too. Although people like to hate on that, but Nate, you know, took his O in the UFC at a time when people were fucking shocked, and he insisted to go back and get that back. And if he hadn't got that victory, his legacy would have been diminished a bit.
Yeah.
So I think it all depends on her next move. If she goes back and gets this W, she'll go right back into being the GOAT conversation again and get these big fights with the other ladies.
I do think one thing that we kind of are overlooking here, though, is that this was the PFL's first pay-per-view. This was her main event. This was her time to shine. And she did fumble that a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think that does go into it a bit as well. Like,
I would think
there had to be a lot of pressure from, you know, outside sources. You know what I mean?
I would think the PFL is pissed right now.
Like, yeah, they're not happy.
They want her to come out and obliterate Pachenko, I would think, to be their next big star. So they can be like, look what we got here instead. Mm-hmm. They've got a close-fought decision here. But all the praise in the world should go to Larissa Pachenko for overcoming tremendous odds, getting this W here, and forever being the first person to defeat Kayla Harrison in mixed martial arts. Now, there was some other pretty interesting fights. Let's go ahead and move on to them. What about the co-main event? Wasn't it Bubba Jenkins versus Brendan Longname?
Yep.
For the featherweight championship?
Yeah, really good fight. Super good fight. You know, Bub Jenkins was doing pretty good, honestly, early in the fight. But one thing that Longmane did that was just, I think, the difference in the fight was his ability to chop at Bubba's legs. Like, he was just couldn't really use, you know. One thing about how Bub Jenkins wrestles, it's a lot of explosion. It's a lot of big takedowns. It's a lot of, you know, lifting guys off the ground. A lot of, like, dominant maneuvers that take a lot of energy as far as, like, your legs and your hips. And when you got a guy chopping your legs down, it's kind of hard to fucking take a shot on a knee and fucking blast through and drive him across the mat when your fucking legs aren't working.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I think that's what was the real difference here for Longmane, is he was able to keep Bubba a little bit on the outside, pick his shots. There was a lot of good exchanges in the fight, but literally the whole difference, I think, were the leg kicks.
Well, he winds up getting the TKO in round 4 at the 238 mark. Just puts him away with the punches.
Yeah.
And he makes a statement here. You know, people that don't know his history, he famously won on the UFC Contender Series twice. Dana passed him over twice.
Yeah.
Basically saying he wasn't interested in his style, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it all stemmed from was a dominant victory where he felt Dana felt that he should have gone for broke and tried to finish the opponent. And
instead of wrestling.
Instead he double-legged him and fucking, you know, pounded his face in for like 3 rounds. And which is one of the dumbest things I've ever fucking heard on Dana White's like point. Because like, yeah. Look at all your fucking champions are, dude. Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like,
talking about Khabib.
Yeah, we were just talking about
and GSP,
Khabib, and now we're talking about people like Islam and you know like Usman and
yeah. Islam Makhachev. Yeah. Don't fight like Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, it's fucking
you know,
stupid.
Who, as much as I might kind of dislike a lot of aspects of those people, there is no denying they're one of
styles,
the premier training camps and gyms in mixed martial arts right now. Mm-hmm. They're winning in Bellator. They're winning in goddamn UFC.
They're winning in PFL.
They're winning in PFL. Yeah. So, yeah, don't fight like those guys. Go out and fight like Michael Chandler and Dustin Poirier.
Yeah.
Who, yeah, okay, so they were in a big spot and everybody knows their names, but they're not sniffing them fucking titles right now, are they?
No.
I hate it when Dana says that shit too, but kudos to Brendan. He flips the fucking bird, and he definitely earned more money here with this victory and this season he's come off of than if Dana had signed him to the UFC. It's undeniable. So it's actually better for him that Dana passed. Now he's a fucking millionaire, at least pre-tax, okay?
Yeah.
He's not a millionaire in a few days.
Yeah.
but, you know.
He's well on his way.
He's well on his way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, that's the thing.
He's got a six-figure bank account now.
Yeah,
we can safely say that. And so, fucking congratulations. Let's touch on a few other fights here before we move into BKFC.
Well, one thing I do
want to
say real quick before we move on. This is the example of why the UFC needs to take a little bit step back and kind of get off their high horse as far as, like, things like fighter pay. These cards being, you know, sort of watered down, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the shit that's happened post-pandemic is because you have people like the PFL who have the same deal you have with ESPN, who are now entering the pay-per-view space, who are taking a lot of your fighters and paying them handsomely to never want to come back to you. But when you lose guys like not to say that the guys who all won, women and men who won the PFL championships are the best of the best of the world, but I'll tell you what, they're getting paid like they're the best of the best of the world.
UFC quit being the best of the best of the world a long time ago.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, there's now...
I feel you.
There's now, if I'm a guy who's, like, someone we're going to talk about next on this card, like Oliver Aubin-Mercier, who was a middle of the kind of pack...
UFC.
In the UFC for a while at lightweight. You know, he was, like, creeping in the top 15, like...
He's a quality fighter,
but
that's a shark tank.
Yeah. It was a, you know, tough division to get through.
There's certain divisions in the UFC, without a doubt, they have the best in the world. And lightweight is one of them. Like, the top 10 at lightweight, top 15 is an absolute shark tank. The whole division is, really.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But he comes into the PFL, and now he's a fucking millionaire.
Fucking knocks out Stevie Ray, who fucking beat Anthony Pettis, also a UFC outcast at this point, so to speak.
Yeah.
Dude, with like one fucking punch KO round two at 440. How beautiful was that? Slept that motherfucker.
Well, that's the thing, too, is if you're the PFL and these two signings happened very, very, like, you know, very similar in timing.
Yes.
Freaking Aubin-Mercier and Ryan Pettis. If you would have told me that he was going to win the PFL championship before Anthony Pettis, I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah, you're nuts.
Yeah. But he does it.
I hope these fighters that are coming up on their contracts or deciding to sign new contracts look at this, because they better jump on this PFL shit while they can, because who knows how long they can keep this up.
Well, that's
I don't know how much money they have or how much money they're making, and you don't know if they're honestly they're going to still be here in 5 years. We hope that they will at this point. I do. I believe in their format. I didn't like it at first. I'm on board now.
Yeah.
I want them to succeed, but let's get real. They're spending a lot of fucking money. Look how much money one is in the hole. If you've seen some of that reporting lately, they're losing millions. All right. You can't tell me these guys are banking right now. So fighters should jump on this while they still can.
Well, not only that, though, but here's the thing. One thing I do think is different with what the PFL is doing right now is they have a large investor group of like a lot of different celebrities and like people in, you know, in the sport that are like funneling money into this company. And then that money from ESPN, obviously it's not like large as a deal as someone like fucking UFC is getting, but I do think that there's substantial money coming from ESPN as well.
There's got to be. And they have sponsors and things too. We won't know what's in their books, but I'm just saying the fighters should go while the grass is green here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's touch on a couple other pretty interesting things, because it's not everything is good for UFC fighters when they come over to PFL. Now, Aspen Ladd, she saw success fighting, you know, a quality fighter in Julia Budd. She gets the split decision victory. We also saw Marlon Moraes make his debut in the PFL, where he loses by TKO to shame on Moraes, no relation. So what about Jeremy Stevens? He also comes in talking about this was his chance to come in and do something, and he winds up losing to Nathan Schultz by submission and arm triangle in round fucking two. I was a bit surprised by that one personally. And then we've also got Gleason Tibau losing a decision 30-27 across the board on this card as well.
Yeah, and then also you had two other guys from the UFC on there too, Rob Wilkinson versus Omari Akhmedov. They fought for the light heavyweight championship, where you see Wilkinson come in and what originally was seen as like he got released from the UFC. He's, you know, wasn't quite level. Loses to fucking Israel Adesanya, obviously no slouch. And now he comes over to the PFL and now he's a fucking millionaire, dude. This is exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. They're changing the game. They're changing how a lot of these free agent fighters should be looking at this.
And that's a fucking really good thing, and I'm on board with that 100%. Yeah. So
word.
That wraps the PFL.
Yeah.
As far as the recapping, it was a light week here in, you know, with the holidays and everything with combat sports. We do have an exciting BKFC card, though, coming up. It's BKFC 34. It's coming from Hollywood, Florida at the Seminole. It's a great card top to bottom. I would argue that the BKFC cards always are. And I'm going to say it again. This is no sponsorship, but it should be. BKFC is the best $5 you can spend in combat sports. You should get the app, BKFC.com. It's $5 a month, and you get all their pay-per-views, plus their library of past cards, shows, interviews, all kinds of shit. Best $5 in combat sports. BKFC 34 has two title fights at the top, Paul. We've got the lightweight championship, where we've got Louis Palomino coming in and defending his lightweight title against Tom Schoaf. Now, the last time we saw Palomino, Paul, he was beating up Elvin Brito for the welterweight title. He is a current dual title holder, champ, in the BKFC, and he is arguably, although I don't think the argument against him is much, the pound-for-pound best bare-knuckle fighter on the planet. He's 7-0, dual champ status, looks like a wizard every time he's out there. Tom Schoaf is on a 3-fight win streak. He's 4-3 overall. He's got a lot of experience in BKFC. I just have to tell you, Paul, while you're firing up that joint, what are we about to smoke?
This is that secret weapon.
The secret weapon? I got to tell you, I just don't see Schoaf having anything here for the champ.
You know what I think is Louis Palomino probably puts together the best game plan and offense I've seen in the BKFC so far.
He's got an amazing fight IQ.
Like his,
for bare knuckle.
Yeah, his IQ and style, like I feel like it's at a level right now that the division has not yet caught up to. And I think this is just going to be another name for him.
Me too. I'm excited to see him hold both titles. You know, just as a quick aside, I'm immediately wondering about this secret weapon. It's not firing up very nice.
I'm
expecting.
I'm very curious to see how he ends up doing as far as like when he defends both these belts and if he's going to do both, because I think a fight between him and Conor Tierney at the weight class above makes a lot of sense for him next. If he's
the welterweight showdown with Conor Tierney should be where it's at.
Yeah,
I mean, the thought of that fight gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Connor, I think, is right up there in the conversation for the best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet in bare knuckle.
Yeah.
And to see him versus Palomino would, holy shit.
And just the clash of styles as well,
yeah.
Because Palomino's such a grinder, and then Connor is such a like tactician that
Connor's movement
such a,
in the ring is amazing. Yeah. I can't wait till we get him back on the show again to talk about this stuff, man. But I'm picking here the lightweight champion to remain the lightweight champion, to go to 8-0. And I'm thinking we're going to see about a fourth round TKO here.
Yeah, I feel that. That makes
sense. That's my prediction. I'm going down to the round. Fourth round TKO.
I feel that.
You're not feeling the upset?
No.
No. All right, let's talk about
that.
Let's talk about the middleweight championship. Now, this is for a vacant title.
Yeah.
All right. We have got the number two light heavyweight coming down in David Mundell. Mm-hmm. All right. And he's facing off against Francisco Ricci, who is the number one ranked middleweight. Now, this is a very interesting matchup of size and style.
Champion.
And he's the interim champ as well. Look, we've got Ricci, who's technically a lower weight class here at middleweight. He's 6'3", all right, 79-inch reach. He's 5-0 in BKFC.
Yeah, he's humongous.
Yeah. Now, here's the weird thing. Mundell coming down from a weight class above. He's 5'8".
Yeah, and I do think that's going to be a real big difference in this fight, to be honest.
He's 5-1 in BKFC. His only loss is to Hector Lombard, and there's not a lot of shame in losing to Hector Lombard.
Yeah.
He's won three since then. He's even got a win over Julian Lane, which in BKFC is a good – that's a quality win.
Quality
that
win,
dude's,
for sure.
That dude's a solid, solid bare-knuckle fighter at this point. Mm-hmm. Francisco Ricci, his last fight was the absolute destruction of Yuli Diaz, which was –
Woo. Yeah, this dude is fucking good. His ability to keep, it's crazy. Sometimes when you watch BKFC, there's, like, this difference in style as far as, like, some people are just fucking wild, and then some people just have, like, just technique that is a head and shoulders above the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what we have in Ricci. His ability to just, like, he lands with intentions in every fucking punch he throws. And he throws them so precise that I feel like that's really going to be the difference in this fight, because with that reach advantage, with that size advantage, his ability to, you know, I think just bombard Mundell is going to be really the difference here.
Yeah, Mundell's clearly got to get in on the inside here and work a lot of hooks to the body. He's got to work uppercuts. He's got to do really almost exaggerated uppercuts if he can get inside to the underneath the chin, you know, of fucking Ricci. There's going to be such a gap there that he's almost like fucking Street Fighter Haruken power punch, you know, fucking spinning uppercut shits to get up there. But if he can, I think that's going to be his key to victory. But I just see that almost as too much to overcome here. Size matters in this fight. And I'm going with Ricci to take that interim title and go ahead and make that, you know, the real title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm taking Ricci as well. I think it's going to be quick, too. I think I'm going second round KO.
Are you? Wow, that's a bit more than me. I'm thinking it's going to get to the third, personally. I think Mundell is pretty durable. It's going to be third, maybe even fourth, but I'm sensing a TKO as well. Now, before we move on into the UFC, I want to take a moment to talk about this cannabis that we're smoking here. This is the prime, the secret weapon, and we just got done smoking that lit earlier, and I'm just going to be brutal. Like, this is not good.
Yeah.
This shit is harsh. It does not taste good, and it's burning like shit.
Yeah.
And especially compared to the lit that we just smoked, which is incredibly smooth and very, very pleasant tasting, a nice terpene profile on that exhale. I mean, look, we're going to smoke it, and we're going to get high. This, to me, would indicate that Prime has not gotten much better than the last time I reviewed them on the LVME sister channel to our show here. A disappointment.
It's got a solid amount of THC, but that's pretty much all it's
that's
got.
The thing, though. I remember that last time. I remember when I did the review, I believe the THC was like 29 or 30%. It was super high, and it tasted like ass. I was like, dude, I'd rather smoke weed that's got 15% THC and tastes fucking good.
Yeah.
I just would.
I'm just
man.
Hoping and praying this gets me, you know, super baked. If not, it's a waste.
I can feel it on my throat, man. This shit is like, woo.
Yeah. I mean, we could switch it up. We could go with the animal face and put this one out.
That shit is. And it's got that chemically tang. And I don't mean like a diesel strain. I mean, it's got the like I didn't like get cured plastic. Properly, processed, flushed right chemical tang. You want to just drop it in there?
Yeah,
that shit is harsh, dude. We got to be able to talk through this.
Yeah. for real.
God bless you. We'll tell you, though. We'll keep it real for you on this show.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. That's a That's a brand I'm going to stay away from still. Wow.
This one is made by, I can't tell, NLBL.
Okay, I've got a bit of experience with their products. I mean, it's just a shame when a cultivator won't take the time to do the steps necessary to make sure their weed tastes good.
Yeah.
And is cured properly and flushed properly. Because there's really not much else you can attribute tastes like that to.
I do think that has a lot to do with just trying to make the most money possible and not putting out like the best quality product.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just over time, as people become more familiar with these products, I think prices will be adjusted.
Oh yeah, try
this,
that.
This shit is like, here, let me try this real quick.
That's a fucking breath of fresh air.
Oh, yeah, dude. This is like night and day.
Yeah, dude.
This is as if you had, like, say, like this is like Johnny Walker Black. If you want to compare it to some liquor, like this right here, if you compare it to Scott, this is Johnny Walker Black. This that we just smoked, this fucking, like, this. This is like Old English 40-ounce malt liquor. Now, they're both going to get you drunk.
Yeah.
But one tastes like shit.
Yeah.
And one is like, it's not the best thing you've ever had, you know, but it's a good, solid, well-made product.
That's just pretty good, actually. That's really sweet.
Oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
Goddamn. All right. Let us shift back into UFC fight night. I've lost count. Before we dive into this, you've seen some of the schedule coming out for next year. Have you noticed if cards are being... Are they at the apex still?
Well, one thing I did want to talk about real quick, though.
Yeah.
So, March 4th is John Jones' date, no matter what. Whether it's Francis or Curtis Blaydes.
What is this information that you have?
Reported on an MMA website. But John Jones will be fighting either Francis Ngannou or Curtis Blaydes for the heavyweight title on March.
We don't have any information as to why it's Curtis instead of Stipe.
I don't know. Seems like something fell off in those negotiations. I don't know what it is. But that's the two names it cited, was Francis or Curtis Blaydes.
I'm not very excited about the Curtis Blaydes fight.
I think John would just tool him up. I think he'd tool him up, and like all that wrestling that Curtis Blaydes has, he thinks would, you know, be the difference. He'll find out real quick that John is just as elite, you know?
Yeah. God, this tastes so much better.
John fucking out wrestled Daniel Cormier, who's an Olympic wrestler, like, you know.
Yeah, Curtis Blaydes ain't going to have nothing for his wrestling. Like, Daniel Cormier would tool up Curtis Blaydes in the wrestling department. And look, we're fans of Curtis. We've met Curtis multiple times. Dude's cool as fuck.
He's cool.
He's nice. He's a great fighter. He's top
dope,
level. We're talking about John Jones here,
he's
though.
Dope.
This is no disrespect or shade at Curtis Blaydes' fucking fighting skills. It's just, he ain't got it. Not for Johnny.
Not for John. Blaydes is a good fighter. He could eventually, maybe, like, in some scenario, become the heavyweight champion. I just don't think a fight against John Jones is where he would get it.
Is that going to be for an interim title, or have they not stated that?
I think they're, if I,
because that's going to mean Francis
read,
is gone.
From what I read, if Francis is not medically clear, or like, not,
well, he's got his contract.
Well, that's not what I read is basically if Francis is not ready by March 4th, he'll be stripped. And I don't, it didn't necessarily explain the contract scenario. But,
oh, it's playing a big part in the background.
Yeah,
for sure.
It definitely is. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. They're giving it a deadline at this point.
Well, interesting. I'm down with that on some levels. I wish we could hear from Stipe.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting that they moved on from that, because I think Stipe and John is the biggest fight in the heavyweight division.
Without a doubt.
Maybe
no
ever.
Title, with a title, it don't matter.
Maybe ever.
Mm-hmm. Like, it could be the greatest, most consequential UFC heavyweight showdown of all time. I 100% agree with that.
Just legacy wise, like,
and who, should they really have to fight other people first? I mean, if, okay, let's say he goes and he fights Curtis, all right, and let's just assume he wins.
Yeah,
and he's made champ or whatever that shit is for, whatever.
Yeah,
he's got to fight Stipe next. Like, Stipe's got to come back for Jones.
Yeah, there's so many weird scenarios.
He doesn't need to fight somebody else to earn the John Jones fight, in my opinion. That's,
And I don't even know if that's what's happening here. You know what I mean? Because what if it's just like, he's like, well, you basically got negotiated out of the fight. And fucking, you know, that was, that's what was left on the table. You know what I mean?
This is the problem. And I don't know if this happened, but we've seen scenarios just like what I'm about to describe happen over and over in the UFC where, you know, John Jones says, I'll do it for whatever, and they agree. And then Stipe's like, well, I'm going to do it for $6 million. Yeah. And they're like, I don't know. And John's like, nope, that's good. We're going to do Stipe. You give him that. And Stipe's like, yep, $6 million. And then they're like, hey, Curtis, you want to fight John Jones for $750K for an interim title? And he's like, yep, sure do.
That's
You can't blame Curtis for taking his $750K, but it just undercuts Stipe, which if Stipe gets paid that, it's like everybody gets better off. The more money all these guys get paid, everybody gets paid better. It's just, but no one fails, no one sees that. They all fail to see it.
It's not even that they fail to see it, but it's manipulated, I feel like.
It is completely manipulated by the UFC. It's manipulated by the UFC,
you know what I mean?
It's just a shame.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not trying to say fuck Curtis Blaydes for that. And that's, and those aren't the numbers that I know. I just made those all up off the top of my head. I don't even know if that scenario happened. I'm just saying that's 100% happened before.
It, yeah, in that same breath, it just sucks because it's completely manipulated, and it's manipulated on the UFC side towards the fighter. Because if you're a fighter and someone said, hey, do you want to fight for the one thing you've always tried to fight for your entire career, for a dollar number that you've never received in your entire life and you want to change your entire life for? Oh, no, John deserves it. Right. You know what I mean? Or, oh, Stipe deserves it. I'm sorry. You know
it's
what
just
I mean?
The quiet narrative, the shadow narrative behind that is the reason the fighter has never received that much money or had that opportunity before is because the UFC kept him from both.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just like feeding your dog scraps and then giving him a regular meal and being like, aren't you just happy you got your regular meal? And the dog's like, oh, fuck, oh, and looking it up. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to compare fighters to dogs. I'm just saying. Should we really be happy when they finally give them something that they should have got a long time ago?
Yeah.
Not, no.
Exactly. And I feel like that's kind of been the disconnect between the UFC and Stipe Miocic in the past, too.
Yeah.
Is he's like had these great feats and they've just really never bought in. Like, you know, they've never really bought into the Stipe game. Like, yeah, he's had like companies like Modelo and stuff that obviously are partners with the UFC as well that have like done good work with him. But, like, as far as the UFC itself, I don't feel like they've given Stipe Miocic his due. Like, there's always this, like, kind of, you know what I mean? There's always this, like, kind of weird negotiation that always happens when he's in these big fights.
I was out there in a pandemic being a first fucking responder. While he's heavyweight champion of the world, UFC's crickets on that shit. I'm not saying you should make a buck off the pandemic. I'm just saying, when you got a good story, you got a good story.
Yeah.
Jesus. Let alone anyways, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about the upcoming UFC fight night here, headlined by Stephen Thompson versus Kevin Holland. And before we get to, you know, Kevin Holland back from his retirement, he's been gone so long.
He was retired for what, 3 days?
We never thought we'd see him again. Hung the gloves up, walked away from the sport, comes back 3 days later.
He gave him the Jesus treatment.
I'm just joking, but let's go ahead and start at some of these. There's actually some pretty entertaining matchups across this card.
This is a really stacked fight night. I think this is probably one of the best fight nights, like talent-wise and like rankings-wise, I've seen in quite a long time.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we've got Darren Elkins fighting on this card. He's always fun.
Amanda Ribas and fucking Tracy Cortez fighting. That's a huge fight.
It's a great fight.
Yeah.
We got Michael Johnson versus Mark Dyke. How do you say his name? Diakase? I never fucking say that shit.
That fool.
But Michael Johnson's fun.
That's
going to
be a banger, bro. Yeah. Like, that's literally two guys who love to just, like, throw hands. So, like, that's going to be a really good fight for sure.
We got Clay Guida versus Scott Holtzman.
Another great
fight. That's a classic fight right there. That's a fight you could have had, a decade ago?
Yeah.
But that's still a good fight right now, man. That's a lightweight. You know, Guida's moved up from the featherweight.
Guida's just having fun at this point.
Yeah,
he's just like riding the wave. He's like, he's got some good fucking performances. He's had some kind of rough ones, but it's like, if he wants to keep fighting, dude, he's still out there putting in work. That's for sure.
Dude, I'll watch him. Fight nights are a great thing for fights like this. All these fights that we're talking about here, these are the things we should see on these fight nights. And while I'm happy to get this at the end of the year on a fight night card, honestly, Paul, I wish they would have just spread some of these fights out to all these goddamn shitty ones we've had for like 6 weeks in a row where they're just terrible.
Yeah.
But whatever, we're getting this. I'm not going to complain about it. We got Angela Hills fighting on this card. Angela Hills, always entertaining. Dude, Nico Price versus Phil Rowe.
That's going to be a banger, too.
Shit. Eric Anders versus Kyle Daukaus.
That's going to be a great fight.
Shit, a middleweight.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these are some pretty good fights.
Damn. Who you got there? Who you got in Eric Anders versus Kyle Daukaus?
Shit, I think Anders needs a win, man.
He needs a win pretty
bad. He needs a win so bad. And Daukaus is tough, bro. Like, that fight when he, with him and Kevin Holland, I thought he really, like, showed his, like, he's a problem.
Yeah, you know he's a good fighter.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
And Eric Anders has a lot of skill, but I'm kind of thinking Daukaus might get him here. And if he handles, you know, Anders another defeat, that's going to be tough. He might be facing the cut. I don't know. We'll see. I have no idea what his contract situation is, but I like him. I like both those guys. It's going to be an entertaining fight.
Yeah, I'm going to take Anders.
We got a really pretty entertaining heavyweight matchup just because at least one half of it, I mean, Tai Tuivasa is fighting. Sergey Pavlovich.
I think that's a, number three versus number five matchup?
Yeah, that's solid. I mean, that could headline a fight night card, really.
Oh, yeah.
Tuivasa
has the star power. I'm surprised that he's not the co-main event here. I thought his name value alone is, you know, he should be freaking main eventing a lot of these like little fight nights. You're telling me these last three main events are more interesting than any of Ty's fights? Like, come on.
Right.
I
like Tuivasa here, though. I mean, Sergey is a solid fighter, but look, Tuivasa is going to
be
hungry.
It's actually going to be a tough fight.
It's a tough fight. He's got something to prove here, but I think he's going to get it done with his big, heavy hand.
Yeah, he's coming off that loss for the title when he fought Cyril Gane.
Exactly.
So this is his chance to get back on track, I think.
I like it. I'm rooting for him. I want him to get the big KO victory here and kind of, you know, get a little bit of hype going on and begin so he can get another solid matchup, another KO, another solid win. He'll be
fight
right
John
back
Jones.
In the mix because that's the way heavyweight goes.
Yeah.
I don't want to see him fight John Jones. No. Jeez, I can't believe you just said those words.
Remember, people were saying that when he was going to fight for the interim title, like, you're going to fight John Jones.
Yeah. People say stupid things. No shade to Ty, but nuh-uh. It looks like the UFC is trying to put a little shine on flyweight here on this card.
Yeah, most definitely.
What do we got?
You got Matt Schnell taking on Matthias. Don't even know how to say that last name.
I think it's Nicolau.
Nicolau.
Matthias Nicolau. Look.
Yeah, it's a 5-7 matchup.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are good, like, fights that push the division forward. You know, we get these stars made out of these kind of fights.
I'm on board with Matt Schnell. I've actually been following his career a really long time. Came across him on fucking reality TV really a grip ago.
Yeah.
I was on some shit. I think Dustin Poirier was on it too way back in the day.
Yeah.
And I've seen him through The Ultimate Fighter and other things. And I'm rooting for him here. This is a good opportunity for him. And he's in the number three slot, you know, right before the main and the co-main events start.
Yeah.
And if he can come out here and he's an exciting fighter, if he can get an exciting win, be good. Be good for the flyweight division, good for his career overall. So I'm rooting for him.
Always like fresh faces at flyweight because, I mean, that's pushing the division along that has had a lot of stale matchups over the years that have made people, like, kind of turn their back on that division. But now, like, with these fresh names in there and these real exciting fights I've been putting on, like, I feel like the flyweight division's back. You know what I mean?
You know, before we get into the main event and the co-main event, another kudos here to the NLVO brand with this animal face. This is a very nice strain.
Saved our lives.
You know, we'll tell you how crappy that last one was, and it's only reinforces how good this one was. And there's a big difference in cultivators and how they care for their cannabis. Everything that we're talking about here, if you're listening, maybe you're new to cannabis and how the quality, it's all in how it's flushed out when it's grown, the chemicals that are used, and It might be all natural. All the stimulants used during the growing process get flushed out 2 weeks before you harvest, or they should be. And then how the strain is then cured afterwards. And when you get these hay tastes or these chemically tastes, it all boils down to that stuff. And this company knows what they're doing. And that was a really nice, nice fucking joint right there.
Yes, sir.
Very good stuff. And very good stuff is also the top two fights on this card. Let's be honest. This co-main event here, we've got a welterweight showdown between the former lightweight champion, Rafael Dos Anjos, taking on Brian, Robbie Lawler killer, Barbarina.
Yeah.
Whew. So your initial thoughts, sir. What do you think?
This is kind of an interesting matchup.
We got a bunch of statistics here we can kind of go over here. You know, go ahead.
It's an interesting matchup because both these guys, I don't really know as far as like – so here's the thing. It's a good matchup for the division, right, as far as like where these guys are at and everything. But like I don't really know what a win does for either one of these guys.
A win doesn't do anything for either one of them.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I feel like
– Well, no. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I disagree with. I think it does something for Brian Barbarina, but
it does to a certain extent. I just mean like as far as like stakes, like
it's not bringing him anywhere close to a title. Exactly. He's not really in that mix.
Right,
he's kind of a gatekeeper at this point, but he's almost there. I don't know what the UFC is using him this way for, but I feel like he's a legend killer right now. He's coming off just. I mean, he fucked up Robbie Lawler.
He beat Matt Brown too.
Right, he fucked up Matt Brown.
He hurt Matt Brown.
And now Rafael Dos Anjos, I'm sorry, he's going to come in here. He's going to get fucked up by Brian Barbarina, in my opinion. Yeah. Look, Dos Anjos hasn't looked good lately. Like, what are his last five fucking fights? He's got five fights to go. He lost to Edwards, and he's got a loss to Michael Chiesa. Then he's got a win over Felder, a win over Renato Macano, and then a loss to that Fezlev dude.
Fezlev. Come on,
that dude,
dude
fucked him up. Fezlev, Fezlev, whatever.
And here's the thing.
He's going to get murked.
And here's the thing. The Felder and the Moicano fights don't really hold much water either because you had Moicano on 48 hours notice.
Yeah.
Showed up at 170 pounds when he fights 155.
Right.
And then you had Felder walk out from the desk and replace fucking his fighter on fucking, I think it was literally like 2 days notice also
exactly.
To fight RDA. So you have two, you know, real fucked up short span wins against two real good fighters in Felder and Moicano.
Those are his
like, that
wins
was a good fight with him
losses,
in Felder.
Yeah.
And then
Brian Barbarina is 4-1 in his last five. He's on a 3-fight streak with his last three coming against Weeks, and then a win against Brown, then a win against Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
He throws six significant strikes per minute compared to three for Dos Anjos. He's 6'5'8". We do have a southpaw versus southpaw matchup, but he's like 6 years younger, 5 years younger. He does absorb more strikes, but I'm just not seeing it. I'm not seeing a path to victory here.
I think the path of victory for RDA would just be extremely technical the whole fight because I think that's the real difference between Brian Barbarina and RDA is I think like maybe Barbarina has a little bit more pop at this point, but I think if RDA just stays technical on the outside and, you know, just sets all his strikes up, I feel like Barbarina does tend to eat a lot of like good shots against a lot of his opponents.
Yeah. On paper, this should be Rafael Dos Anjos' fight. Yeah. I mean, if you look at their resume and what they've accomplished, he's a better martial artist than Brian Barbarina.
Yeah.
But at some point, age, the wear and tear in the cage, and size come into matter. He's still coming up from lightweight. Barbarina's fucking 6 feet tall. He ain't making lightweight anytime soon.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a big dude. He's going to go in there. He's durable. He can take some punches. And he's just too much. And too big at this point. Dos Anjos should be back down at lightweight. He shouldn't be, and he shouldn't be fighting the top 10 there either. And not that Barbarina's top 10, but I'm saying
he should go to the PFL.
Yeah, maybe you should be hitting PFL at lightweight.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be taking a beating from Brian Barbarina at welterweight in the UFC. But that's my prediction, a beat down by Barbarina.
I think Barbarina gets an upset win here too.
That brings us to, you know, the main event. Paul, which sees a fighter that we've all missed. You know,
gone so long.
He was been gone from the game. He was retired. He was on the sidelines.
Hung him up.
Paul. Hung up the gloves. Walked away from it all.
Now he's back.
Only to come back to take on Wonder Boy. We're talking about Kevin Holland. The man, the myth, the legend. Returning from the couch, so to speak.
Come to save some motherfuckers' lives, probably.
You don't know what we're talking about. Kevin Holland, famously here, not so famously, depending on how close you pay attention to MMA, he retired for like 3 or 4 whole days.
He retired on Ariel's show.
Yeah, after the one-sided beatdown he took on short notice at the hands of Khamzat Chimaev. I feel you, dude. That's disappointing. You know, you get tired of wrestling in there. I get it. I don't want to see Khamzat wrestle people either. I don't want to watch you wrestle, Kevin. Nobody does. I want to watch you fight Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, though.
Yeah.
That's a fight. Yeah, that's a good strike in there. Kevin Wonderboy, I said. Kevin and Wonderboy. They match up nice in the striking department, I think. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a difference between, like, speed and efficiency versus, like, power, mm-hmm. for sure. I think Wonderboy, obviously, is going to be the more, like, polished, you know, striker in this. But
he's
9
years older.
Yeah.
Then he's not Wonder Boy anymore. He's like
he's Wonder Man.
He's Wonder Man at best.
But the thing
he's
is,
almost wonderly old, Wonder Old Man.
I do think in the last few fights that Wonder Boy's had, though, I think the difference in a lot of those fights has been people getting wild and throwing big strikes, and him kind of getting hit more often.
Yeah,
it's kind of been the
difference. His last 5, he's won 2, he's lost 3, he's coming off a 3 or a 2-fight loss streak. Mm-hmm. It includes his shocking knockout loss to Anthony Pettis in there, his win over Vicente Luque, his win over Jeff Neal. You know what? He lost to
Gilbert Burns. And Bilal Muhammad.
We all know this is going to be a striking match here.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Kevin Holland is an unorthodox fighter. He could come out and surprise us all and go for takedowns against Thompson, but I would be pretty shocked at that.
Yeah.
He does have some advantages in the size department. I mean, he's got a 3-inch height advantage. He's got about 6 inches in the reach department.
That's
9 years in the youth.
Yeah, I wonder if Wonder Boy has ever fought someone who's been this much taller than him at welterweight. I know his career, he probably has, because he's like kickbox and karate and everything.
Yeah, over the course of his career, another
maybe,
sport,
but like
sure.
In the UFC, I can't think of anyone he's fought who was bigger than him, at least at welterweight.
You know, and Thompson has such accolades behind his striking, but if you look at his statistics, his strikes landed per minute are 3.9. Kevin's are 3.85, so they're tied. Mm-hmm. Accuracy is 43% for Wonderboy. Well, guess what? It's 54% for Kevin Holland.
Holland has a lot
That's
of fights for his age.
And their strikes absorbed per minute are about equal to 2.81 for Thompson, 2.38 for Holland. And their defense is virtually identical as well at 56% versus 55% respectively. Mm-hmm. If you look at their grappling, they're virtually identical as well. Their takedown averages are basically non-existent. They're under 1 for each fighter. Takedown accuracy is about 40% for each. And the defense is, you know, 63% for Stephen Thompson, a little worse for Holland at 50%. And neither one of them's got shit for submissions, okay? Kevin Holland averages half a submission. All right.
Although Kevin Holland actually does have pretty good jiu-jitsu.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if it goes to the ground, Holland's got the advantage here. It's one of the few fights where he would have the advantage.
Yeah. But he doesn't want to go to the ground. He wants to strike. And I want to see it.
Who do you got? And how and why?
I'm going to go with Holland, you know, just because I think his power is going to be the difference. I think he's just a younger version of, you know, a guy that would beat someone like Wonderboy Thompson.
I'm picking Kevin Holland for the same type of reasons. I think his striking is a little too unorthodox, and I think that'll be the difference where Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is picture perfect for technique.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you have the advantages that Holland has in the age and the size and the reach, and you mix that with about equal in the statistics department when it comes to striking, so he's got this weird movement and these unorthodox things that he does, I think that's going to be the difference maker here, and it's going to earn him a decision victory against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Going 5-round decision, huh?
I am going a 5-round decision victory, yes.
Interesting.
I think we are going to see 0 takedown attempts from Wonderboy, and we are going to see One from Kevin Holland.
I'm going to go three. Three from Kevin Holland.
Three from Kevin and zero from Wonderboy?
One from Wonderboy. One. Two. Actually, Wonderboy has like started to incorporate some wrestling since he's been.
You know, that's what I was saying. I want to revise. I think two and two. I'm changing mine. Two and two on the takedown.
Going four and two.
No one's going to land any, maybe, but.
I don't know. What if that was the difference?
What if Kevin comes in and just takes him down, subs him?
That'd be cool.
I'd be clapping.
But yeah, this is an interesting fight for sure. And I'm going to go with Kevin Holland by knockout in the second round.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I really think the big difference, when kind of similar to what you were saying before, with guys who are super technical like that, is when people get like wild, and then he also has those like reach advantages and everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those wild shots just land perfectly when they're not supposed to. You know what I mean? That's kind of what happened when he fought Anthony Pettis, and Anthony Pettis fucking Superman punched him after he whooped Anthony Pettis' ass the whole time, kept him on the outside, was doing everything perfect. But when you have that, you know, that equalizer, whether it's, you know, great hands or, you know, great kicks and stuff like that, which I think Kevin Holland does.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. It's not going to matter how technical Wonderboy is. I think there's just going to be a shot that's going to hit him that he's not going to see, you know, and that'll be the end of it.
Great. I like it. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the card.
Me too.
Brother, should we talk about these fight night cards? This one's a fucking home run.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And we've got BKFC on top of that as well. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a great weekend of fights.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've also got other things that we couldn't really touch on, but we can only do so much in a show, but there's some great boxing. I mean, Tyson Fury, I believe, is fighting Oh Boy this weekend.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to get excited about there. I mean, he's fighting.
I thought that was on the 30th.
The 3rd.
Oh, 3rd.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, that's only interesting, really, if Fury loses. Although, Fury, you know, he is saying that if Usyk isn't ready to go in February, that he will fight Joe Joyce at Wembley Stadium. And then he is saying that he wants to fight three times minimum in 2023.
I thought he wanted to retire.
That's what I'm saying. But we knew it at the time. Neither one of us bought that retirement shit. That was a tactic to try and land the fucking Usyk fight.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. And like, Tyson Fury can't retire like this. We already know it.
Yeah.
And now he's talking about, you know, he's squeezing this fight in, which is just a stay active fight right here. That's against what's his name? Derek. Yeah. So that's interesting, though.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So we'll talk about the results next week on, you know, the boxing and some of the other combat sports that are taking place. So fucking Tyson Fury, I know. Oh, you know, we got that Tank Davis Ryan Garcia fight has been confirmed by Showtime, too.
Yep. That got confirmed. And it sounds like Spence and Crawford are fucking gonna fight now.
Oh, I hadn't heard this. Really.
Yeah, but it just, I don't know. It seems like every week it is, and then it's off, and then it is, and it's off, and then he's got like another opponent lined up.
Is Crawford still operating without a promoter?
I think so.
Well, is this what the fucking problem is? I mean, maybe. I'm just wondering. Maybe not. Yeah. I haven't looked into it at all.
I haven't looked into that part.
Is this why no one can sign a deal with you? You're just in there yourself fucking it up?
Or? Yeah. I don't know.
Or not, maybe not you're fucking it up, but that's fucking up the deal, because maybe the other side's being like, oh, fuck you, I'm not going to deal with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, both of them just keep throwing insults at each other, so I don't really necessarily know how to, you know, some of those, like, back and forth get some information out of, but most of the time it's like, is that true? Are they just saying that? You know, you backed out, or... You only didn't take the fight because you were going to get less, $25,000 less, or something like that. And that's always like the fucking difference with those big mega fights. That's what I hate about boxing mega fights. In the UFC, like, sometimes it happens, like, but generally it's like you have a contract and this is what you're getting based on, you know, those.
Yeah,
kind of
the
fights.
UFC, we used to be able to say they made the big fights, so, but honestly, they're pulling the same shit these days. We're just talking about how we're not getting John Jones versus Stipe Miocic.
Yeah.
We're getting John Jones versus Curtis Razor Blades, which is the fight that, like, nobody fucking wanted outside of Curtis Blades. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he loves that shit.
I don't blame him. I would too.
And it's just like this right now in boxing. It's the same shit. Just because they won't, you know, whatever. We're getting some good fights, so hopefully on the horizon. We've got interesting things. I'm really interested in Ryan Garcia versus Tank Davis.
Yeah, that's a huge fight.
And the winner has a lot of options after that. I mean, they're already talking about Devin Haney.
Yeah. Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Shakur's better than everyone, actually. Have you seen that footage of him and Haney sparring?
I have. Yes,
very
sir.
Interesting.
Very.
And now they're kind of spatting in each other back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, dude, there's some real interesting matchups that are coming up for sure.
Yeah, I'm stoked. If they'll get done, they could be a whole bunch. It could be a great year, 2023, for boxing.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. We'll see.
Yep. Well, I think that about wraps up our show for today.
It does. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Be sure to head over to our website, SWATMMA.com. Click that cool stuff button or click any of the links wherever you're watching this, whether it is on YouTube, if you're clicking off social media or on any of our streaming sites, and visit, follow our links for the UFC store. You can check out their brand new holiday gift drop. They've got everything from fan apparel to gifts. They got some awesome new Timex watches with the fucking octagon as the timepiece shape.
Get the little title belts too if you want.
Yeah, all kinds of cool stuff on there. And if you want to help support the podcast, you can just use our links. And you can also find some interesting things, products from Binoid as well, if you're interested in CBD, Delta-8 THC, products that are legal in all 50 states and some other countries as well. Links are where, Paul?
SWATMMA.com, where you can head over there as well and click the gear button, buy a t-shirt, support the podcast, then head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMA Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.